Okay, we are live, according to the big red box in the corner. So, hi everyone, welcome to OT Security Connect. I'm Elliot Davies, the founder of the community and cybersecurity recruitment business, Quantahire. So this session concludes a good first year for the community. Thanks for everyone that supported the series so far. Goal from the beginning was to make a community that unites OT security leaders and practitioners, whilst enabling knowledge sharing and network opportunity for the members. So we welcome all feedback. If you've got anything you'd like to see in the future, please do let me know. We've started the 2025 planning already. So always open to messages about topics, themes, or ideas that you'd like to see coming out of the community for next year. Today, as you know, we'll be discussing OT penetration testing, challenges and standards. We'll debate the pros and cons of its current form, whether it's time to standardize the practice. And I'm honestly privileged by the panel that we've got today, the guys leading the discussion. So I'll start with some introductions and then we'll get into the session. So first panelist today is Martin Slack. Martin leads the ICS practice for one of the UK's leading pen testing consultancies, Pentest Partners. Martin brings a wealth of credibility to the discussion. He's got a deep understanding of the value of pen testing together with in OT, together with its challenges as well. We've also got Gavin Dilworth. Gavin joins us from Christchurch, New Zealand. So it's good morning to Gavin. He's got 15 years plus experience in engineering and consulting in ICS and OT, currently working as a director for Assessment Plus, recent work experience at Nozomi Networks as well. Gavin's renowned, is a renowned expert in the Oceania region. So he's regularly speaking at leading industry events and podcasts in the area. We've also got Rick Derbyshire. Rick is the principal security researcher at Orange Cyber Defence. He's an esteemed OT security public speaker, an industry leader with numerous publications and presentations for events like Black Hat and B-Sides. Most recent research piece can be found in the Orange Cyber Defence Security Navigator 2025 report. I'd highly recommend adding this to your reading list. And then we've also got Asif Hamid Khan. Asif is a leading cybersecurity consultant in ICS and OT. He's worked extensively in the UK, the Middle East, and India. He possesses a deep technical understanding and ability to implement risk assessments and standards across many industry verticals. He's a regular contributor to wider OT security initiatives. Look out for an upcoming talk on his on a newly established OTISP symposium. He's discussing isolated recovery environments, I think on Saturday. So that's our panel. We'll go straight for the discussion. Please feel free to share your questions along the way. We'll do our best to answer them live, or we'll get back to you after if we've got too much and we don't have time. So the first question, and I'm going to aim this at Rick to kickstart the discussion. Do we need to standardize the practice of pen testing in OT? With no current public methodologies available, so is it time to standardize the practice?
So yeah, I'm just dropping things. We're currently working on a project that are in cyber defense where we are looking at our OT pen testing and the current challenges and the weird thing came up that was we simply aren't there are no public methodologies that kind of standardize OT pen testing, and this is. It was highlighted as a problem, a major question in the interview process. And this was exacerbated by the fact that when we actually interviewed the OT penetration testers, every single penetration tester had a different methodology. And I'm not just talking about, you know, they did something slightly different. I mean, completely wildly different. They had different interpretations of what OT was, of what penetration testing was, and most importantly, what OT penetration testing, when the terms are combined, was. And it went further where we asked the participants what would be, what's the biggest challenge to begin with? And it was the lack of standardization. And one of the highlights of the interview process was we weren't just interviewing OT penetration testers, we were interviewing the procurers as well. So these might be people that are asset owners at factories, water treatment facilities, energy companies, for example. And they said that the lack of standardization was a problem for them as well. for the obvious reasons that they didn't know necessarily what they were going to get, but also they find that they pay significantly more per day rate of OT pen testing because it's a niche skill. And the fact that they pay more isn't the issue. It's the fact that they pay more when dealing with the uncertainty of what they're going to receive at the end of the test, which is the main issue. So everyone has highlighted, like, unanimously throughout the interview process so far, that standardization is a large issue. But it isn't so simple that we just say, yes, we standardize it, because who is the arbiter of OT penetration testing that defines this standard? When we can't really define or come to a consensus of a definition for OT penetration testing or OT penetration testing, how do we then actually define a standard for it? Who is in charge of that? And even then, it's not so simple to just define this standard, because a number of the testers that we've interviewed have stated that essentially you can't just standardize it in the way that you would expect CREST or CHECK testing, where it's quite granular and you have a very specific thing, because the diversity of OT environments, be that sector, vendor ecosystem, or regulatory requirements or many other different factors, mean that you need to keep it relatively flexible while still trying to standardize it. So there's a lot of work to be done before we come up with some sort of standard that we actually say is fit for purpose. And that's, I guess, how we start.
Can I kick in there? I kind of agree with a lot of what's coming out of that in terms of, we bandy a lot of terms around this sector. I'm from a background in control systems, so I used to deal with ICS, and it was ICS for a long time. Then OT, and then we talk about cyber physical systems, and then we talk about OT systems, and IoT system, IIoT system. And there's so many, sometimes you kind of think marketing terms to define this floating around without anybody really understanding what they're dealing with. But I think part of the problem there is that it covers such a wide range, as you say, of areas, sectors, types of technology, you know, from really, really specialist things through to, let's be honest with you, a lot of the technologies we use at the higher layers of the Purdue model now are COTS operating systems with a clever bit of software on the top. So I kind of recognize the challenge around the standardization of from that point of view, but I also recognize that if you're somebody that's looking to get a pen test in an OT environment, what does that mean to you? Especially as, to be fair, a lot of the people that are you dealing with in these things, they're not necessarily technical people. They're not technology people. They're project managers. They're, you know, if you're lucky, they've engaged somebody on the IT side. It's maybe the IT team are actually asking for the pen test on the OT environment because they've been, you know, it's been kicked over the fence to them to look after, certainly from a cybersecurity point of view. You don't necessarily often speak to the engineers, the operational engineers that actually run the plants, that run the control systems, because sometimes they get missed out. So I think there is a problem around that. And I also recognize that, you say, people approach this differently. You've kind of stolen the march on what I was going to say for the next question, but there isn't that standardization, you know, there isn't that this is exactly how you do it. But I would suggest, to be fair, even on the IT side, there is a lot of wiggle room about how people do specific things with specific technologies. You know, there are methodologies, there are frameworks to build around, and I think maybe we should be looking towards some sort of framework around it rather than a standard as such. But yeah, that's I think it's going to be hard to standardize across this, especially when various companies just come up with new terms to reflect, you know, whoever they're going to be that comes out and just goes, an analyst somewhere says, oh, I'm going to call this, and it might take traction, it might not. I always like the cyber physical thing, which seems to have died a bit of a death now. People don't talk about cyber physical as much as they used to, but I think that kind of reflects a lot of what you see in this across this industry, this area, OT, ICS, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Probably ask Gavin the question here, because we're all based in the UK. Is it the same New Zealand's?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Having worked both in the UK and New Zealand, I can definitely tell you it's pretty much the same. There's no standard. You've got the variety of environments. we don't really have automotive here, but you know, if you went to one waste treatment facility and then off to like a manufacturing factory, they might be using the same PLCs, but it's all implemented differently. But at the same time, as Martin pointed out, the higher stack in the Purdue model, it's all mostly generic operating systems. So at which point you can apply your standard practice to a certain degree, highlighting risks, of course. But fundamentally, yeah, same thing over here, same thing in Australia, same thing in the UK. We're all tackling this problem, I believe.
What about the Middle East, Asif, as well? Because I know you've experienced them.
I have seen a significant challenges when it comes to scoping of penetration testing. For instance, for external pen testing, still you can rely on penetration testing execution is standard for pen testing execution, irrespective of black box, white box, gray box approach you are taking. However, for internal pen testing, where the problem lies in a standardization approach, and why we don't have one is that, and the reason too is every single activity must go through a method statement and activity risk assessment approval from the asset owner. That's where the problem begins. It's not like IT, I have static IP and I'll start my boom, boom pen testing and all those stuff. So, I mean, yeah, and every organization has a different risk appetite. Might be the case if you're going with your approach, your method statement get approved by midstream, downstream oil and gas company, whilst energy will not do it. Since everyone has their own risk appetite framework defined for the method statement and activity risk approval. So yeah, on a very high level, I would say a baseline, there is a scope of designing a baseline to guide asset owners to see the value of pen testing. But yeah, again, it totally dependent on whether asset owner have the test bed. Because if they have test bed, it could be a mix of gray box and white box approach.
But I think you've touched on a very important aspect that certainly for the traditional pen testers and people with a normal pen test background, they probably never really had to use a method statement per se in certain environments. Whereas, you know, I'm not saying every OT pen test is going to need a method statement or similar, but in certain industries especially, they do want, that's how their standard practice. If you're doing anything on those sorts of systems, you've got to have some sort of method statement, and that throws a lot of people in pen testing because that's not something they necessarily have got huge awareness of.
You're right, Martin. Even if you have some standard, and if you go there, might be the case you have to tweak that standard as per the asset owner need. Because I remember in one instance, I was only advised to do Nessus scan only on 3.5 level, that too with only KB number plugin enabled in Nessus. So my whole structure of pen testing got changed along with the VAPT approach. So it's a typical example I'm telling. So yeah. That's an issue.
I think this harks back to the idea that a lot in the interviews I've experienced, a lot of the testers have said that you can't just standardize and I think Martin was on the right page where perhaps a framework is descriptive rather than prescriptive is more important. And maybe we follow an approach such as how 62443 has the security levels that indicates, dependent on your sector or your criticality or just your risk appetite in general, what kind of tests that you look for. But I found that at the same time, different testers with different approaches have different successes with how they articulate their tests and then what they are allowed target environments. So some people that have had a very IT focused, I'm an IT pen tester that has moved into OT approach, have had a lot more struggle with articulating what they want to do because they are focused on the vulnerabilities. They're focused on the assets, the people, the processes, and where are the vulnerabilities. Whereas the people that have had most success, where I've had people say, oh, we've gone down to levels one or zero in the Purdue model. And they've very much focused on the process. So rather than saying we want to find vulnerabilities within your environment, they've said we want to find how we can disrupt your process or how a bad guy would disrupt your process and then advise on how to prevent that. And a lot of management. And I'm not saying that is carte blanche exactly what it is, but it does seem to have a trend as far as I've found so far speaking to people about this.
Yep, 100%. And the only people who are giving freedom are the people, asset owners, who are having test bed. They are performing it very well. They are saying, all right, just break it. Do whatever you want. So, but not everyone has that funding and resource capability to have the test bed.
It's becoming more common, though, test beds.
Yes.
You got to test your backup somehow, right? So I think most organizations realize the value, but I mean, your guys' experience might be different, but what I've seen is a test bed is usually the old SCADA server that got upgraded and the old RTUs and the old PLCs and that they managed to salvage from the scrap bin. And that's basically what they've ended up with.
And I think it's nowadays it's easier to spin up a test environment because virtualization is becoming more and more common. In the past, you needed physical boxes, and unless you're in a certain industries where they kind of used those boxes for development environments or whatever testing environments, then you were lacking in that. And nowadays it's, you spin up a few virtual machines, it doesn't need to be the same, it's just representative of the environment. So
well, I've changing subject slightly, one of the things the 64.3 that I think it does really, really well is the different approaches. You know, you start with gap analysis, then vulnerability testing, then pen testing. And the reason I bring that up is I've had the most success doing vulnerability testing, just running something like System Info against Windows Exploit Suggester Next Gen, you know, where's NG, and getting information out of that. Extremely passive, no real damage to the environment. That seems to work quite well with very immature sort of organizations just kicking off. But as for pen testing itself, generally, most of the time, the success is really just seeing what can actually get through level 3, 3.5 to an outbound. As soon as you start getting down to like the 2.1.0, a lot of the times you can actually tabletop that. Like there's no... It's like, oh, yeah, well, we got to the PLCs and we can modify things. It's like, yeah, well, you got to any engineering workstation or IPC server or SCADA server, of course you're going to be able to manipulate the process. So the value sort of drops at that point. That's my experience. But I was just curious what you guys were thinking.
Yeah, I think you've got... Sorry.
No, go on, Martin. I think you should probably go first.
No, you go in, Rick, because I know you've got internet problems, so I'll let you jump. You're probably ahead of me.
Wait, what was the question? I'm so sorry.
What was the value like in the approaches you've seen? So in terms of what actually brings the biggest value to the end user, and I've seen vulnerability tests for immature users bring the most value there. And if you're actually doing a pen test, it's only really just ingress and egress, like the 3.5 sort of getting in and out of the system level type thing.
So
what have you seen?
Analyzing the interviews. And we were finding that the different different participants had different approaches. The ones that seemed to have the most success were the ones that were very much focused on the process. And that extended not just to how they considered the scoping procedure and everything like that. It also extended to what kind of test they did. And I don't want to say that this is absolutely 100% a trend, but it just seems to be the trend of the interview process so far. Those that were following more of a goal-based attack narrative, like akin to red teaming or purple teaming, had a lot more success in really identifying the vulnerabilities within the process. What we found was that whether practitioners or procurers of pen tests both said they didn't like the kind of IT approach of a big list of CVEs and a report that were entirely out of context. In fact, I had a quote that was basically, vulnerabilities are useless unless the impact is proven. And essentially, unless there is a verifiable impact on the process, it really doesn't matter because you're going the ones that feasibly would impact the process if leveraged.
Yeah, I kind of agree with some of that approach. I think, going back to your question, Gavin, I think there's, I think it very much depends on the individual company and what they're looking to get out of it, but it's also related to their maturity in their OT cybersecurity. I'm sure we've all had instances where somebody's come to you and said, "Oh, we want a red team," and you say to them, "Okay, sit down." Start rubbing your hands because a red team costs an awful lot of money, and then you start talking to them, and you ask some basic questions, and it becomes apparent. Why do you want my boss said we need a red team on the OT, or somebody in IT said we need a red team on, and you kind of look at and you think, well, to be perfectly honest with you, you don't want a red team. What you want is somebody to come in and do some really basic stuff with you first before you're even ready for a red team. And sometimes you insist, and then you send them how much it's going to cost for a red team, and they come back and say, "Can you have a pen test, please?" But at the end of the day, it very much comes down to how mature they are in their OT cybersecurity. And some companies have been doing this a long time, especially in certain industries. Oil and gas, for example, is one of those industries where they've always traditionally had a lot of money to throw at the problem, and they've often thrown the money at the problem. But other industries, even now, the CAF and all of that that's come out in the UK, it's still in certain industries really quite immature. That what you mentioned there, Gavin, about that boundary controls between the 3.5 and the IT networks, or even they've some systems nowadays it's directly onto the internet via a DMZ. There's a lot of companies that is a really good start for them, because I'm sure we've all looked at these sorts of systems and seen how bad that segregation is often between the IT and the OT networks, how little control they really have between the systems, how poorly their firewalls are configured, and it gives them a nice warm fuzzy feeling that they've got something right, or it gives them a start to say, before you start spending a load of money on getting all this monitoring and security monitoring on your OT systems, maybe you should fix the boundary in the first place and look at what you're letting in and who you're letting in, and can make a little bit more control at that level. So yeah, I think it comes down a lot to the maturity of the individual clients that you're dealing with from a cybersecurity point of view.
We've had a couple of comments, which is really good. Thanks, Jamal and Mohammed. I just thought I'd highlight one of the comments from Mohammed, because it's, I don't know if you can see this. Does this pop up on the on your presenter screens? Okay, good. So it's really highlighting a challenge for blue teams in terms of being able to train on real systems. Is this something that you see with a lot of clients, Martin, or for approaches for those teams?
To be honest with you, in terms of the blue teams on OT, again, unless you're a quite mature cybersecurity program in your OT environment, you don't see. We don't see very many blue teams actually running successful operations in OT. It's coming, and there are obviously leaders in certain sectors and in certain areas that do this, but there's an awful lot of OT out there that isn't being monitored in any way, shape or form. There's a lot of OT networks that aren't even logging anything. We've had clients come to us and say, "Oh, we'd like to get a DFIR retainer on some of our OT," and they speak to DFIR people and say, "Well, where are your logs keeping? Where you've got?" And they're like, the blank stares at people, and you're like, well, you need to get some of that in place before you can start doing your DFIR. So yeah. I think there is that, where it is being done, I think there is a challenge for blue teams, because you can't, you're looking at systems that are live systems, and maybe this is where some of the test environments can come into effect, so that you can have a little bit of a play on them maybe to try and do stuff. But I think it's rare, but it's increasing, but it's still not common to have a huge number of of blue teams operational in OT environments. Big companies probably do, certain sectors probably do, but in a lot of companies, it's they're not ready for that yet, to be perfectly honest with you, often. I don't know what other people's experiencing. I know some nodding heads there, but yeah.
I can echo that. That's definitely what I've seen. People have put in monitoring even when they have the logs, and they've done the correct stuff, and it's the monitoring, OT monitoring thing, like a Clarity, Nozomi, Dragos, etc., is all connected to the scene. Even with that, the number one thing people ask me to do is, when are you writing your security analyst course for OT? I get bugged all the time. It's coming, it's coming. And the reason for that is that I've seen that in, for those that weren't aware, I used to work for Nozomi Network, so I saw a lot of monitoring environments. Myself and Jeffrey Chi ended up writing the Nozomi Network's security analyst course because of this exact issue. People have no idea what they're supposed to be doing when they get an alert or when something happens. So, yeah, but to echo Martin, it is increasing. But it is, once again, a level of maturity that most people haven't reached yet. A lot of organizations put the logs in or get the logs set up, put monitoring in, and then it just sits there for like 2 years before someone actually puts a program in for people to actually look at it. That being said, organizations are starting to get that ball rolling. And, you know, you can actually see they're now finally investing in people looking after those systems. So that's finally happening, but yeah, the test environments, the trainings, and the organizational willpower to tackle it, it's all coming. It's finally starting to kick off nicely. I'll pass on to somebody else.
I mean, I don't have anything to add.
Okay,
you both have really covered that.
Yeah, I think the question or the comment's been really well addressed there. And on the agenda, we have, to what extent does OT penetration testing adapt IT TTPs and principles to address OT specific challenges effectively? And I know, Gavin, you've just given a good section there, but I'm going to address this one to you as well, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, fundamentally, a lot of the TTPs are going to be the same. As you follow through, you're generally going down the stack of the Purdue model. Fundamentally, when I run Purple Team engagements, we go for a assumed breach. So we don't even bother trying to attack the 3.5. We just go straight down to 3 and you know, start looking for what we can actually achieve there. And it's going to be, once again, based on the organization's maturity. If you're on the purple teaming route and you're looking at TTPs, you're generally a mature environment, at which point they have monitoring systems typically. So it's about getting the, you know, what are the threat actors doing, creating up a profile of what their TTPs are and mimicking it. And as I've said before, once you get an engineering workstation, SCADA server, DCS server, you can now send any commands you want to a process. It's only a matter of understanding what that process is before you can create an upset. The key takeaway I feel is you definitely want to purple team it. You definitely want to see what your blue team is actually seeing and what they're not seeing. That's probably the better part. So that's the key bit there. And then the other one, realistically, is just making sure that as threat actors are moving towards LulBAS or living off the land binaries and scripts, they're using and leveraging Modbus TCP. They're using OPC UA. So your detection capabilities also needs to include those types of things. Previously, I'm sure we've all been guilty of this. It's like, oh, that's OPC UA. That's, you know, Rockwell's. That's Profinet. Don't worry about it. We don't need to look at that. That's fine. That comms link. Whereas these days, they are being targeted. So, that's my that's me over.
Going on the kind of like living off the land thing. One of the things I've started calling it to distinguish it from IT is living off the plant. So you heard that here first, hopefully. So hopefully I've coined that phrase and get attributed to it. But what I found both through reading the is the reality that it isn't just a case of getting to the OT and then it's a simple thing. It's easy to attack the process and cause some meaningful impact. And that's generally one of the things that the customers want to know is, can you impact the actual process? And one of the quotes from the interview process was, Modbus isn't a vulnerability. And it's true, because you shouldn't be just because Modbus is unencrypted or it's easy to use it to access PLCs, it doesn't really mean that you can do anything meaningful with it without actually knowing how together and what you actually do with that protocol to cause an impact on the process. So the OTTTP concept to me is how do you use that living off the plant, that native functionality to actually impact the process? And I don't think we see that very frequently in OT penetration testing. I understand that there are some serious limitations, especially when you get to very critical environments, you can't do that. Actually doing the TTPs themselves. I think that is quite important and it's missed.
You're right. Frequently. I agree with you, because whenever there is a OT pen testing, I mean, 80% of the focus is on a stage one. And once you have access to stage two, where you can tweak a specific pieces of command that can hamper a logic, things is stopped, Rick. And that's where people are not going, moving forward. Client is asking us to stop. And that's where the thing is missing.
Yeah, but I'd also like to reflect on that, and the fact that is, yes, if you've got onto the systems and you've got control of DCS, you can do things, you can send commands, you can do pretty much what you want. But there is still that hurdle of understanding the process, the physical process, understanding the control of that process. And that's not a trivial matter for most, you know, unless you're an engineer, unless you're a process engineer, unless you're an OT or control systems engineer or have got experience in that, it's, you know, so you can sit there and say, well, I can look and I can open and close this valve, or I can stop and start this pump. And so what, potentially, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It might mean something, it might mean nothing. The fact that you can do it is of concern, but, you know, realistically, if you were considering, you know, a bad actor, what would they want to do to that process? You know, they, as a pen tester or as a pen testing company or whatever, you might have limited knowledge of that industry or from the process control point of view, in terms of what they, you know, what you're doing and what they do and how they do it, and specific sites, what does it mean that they can access and close this valve? Is that going to cause them a problem, or is that something that isn't going to cause them a problem, if you see what I mean? It's how big an impact is that going to have? What is the consequence of having controls? And you can randomly say, well, they can randomly start doing stuff, and yeah, you're going to hit something that's going to make things go badly wrong. But as Asif said, you're not going to be allowed to do that in a live environment as a pen tester. Nobody in their right mind is going to let you start playing with their process. So this is, you know, this is why you end up on, if you've got some sort of test environment and that has some sort of, I mean, I've seen test environments where you've got some simulated control, for example, and then you can kind of start playing around. You might not have a physical valve there, but you've got some sort of simulated control where you can send controls to a valve and it will give you a response back to what's happening and how that affects the process. But at the end of the day, you still need to know what your impact is going to be on a process. Otherwise, you kind of, sometimes you're shooting into dark, and you might be lucky, you might not be lucky, if you see on how that impacts the. But you can do it, and from a client point of view, that's really what they want to know. The fact is that you can do it, if you see what I mean. So,
yeah, I've always found, probably my naivety or ignorance, one of the two, but generally the we want to impact the process, it's like, okay, can I see your LOPAs? And for those that don't know what LOPAs are, it's layers of protection analysis. And yep. I found even IT pen testers can read those. And that will give you the LOPAs themselves, for those, once again, that haven't seen one, will give you generally the biggest impacts, the biggest risks.
And I think it's a very well-defined studies. If you see hazard operability studies, it will tell you the impact. You don't have to actually do it. You can fetch the result from there. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that generally I'm all I have to go, right, it's like, right, can you access this workstation, server, whatever, that, right, cool. Can you send commands to this PLC? Cool. Can you, hypothetically, you know, can you send these four commands at the same time, which will cause this event? And they're like, yes, right, we've impacted there the process. Then. We don't need to do the simulation. We know we can do it.
But
to me, that brings in... Yeah, I think that brings in the thing as well that I wanted to touch on at some point is that making sure you've got the right people involved with these OT pen tests, because so often, as I've said before, sometimes it's an IT person that's asking for this because their policy in IT is that these pen tests take place. They've now been given responsibility for the OT because nobody else had the technical skills to ability understanding to do it potentially, and therefore they're like, well, we pen test our IT systems, why don't we pen test our OT systems? And they don't always get the right engagement with the right stakeholders. So you don't get those, you know, that understanding of the consequences often of what you can do. I mean, and I think it's been mentioned, I think Gavin mentioned earlier, any sort of OT pen testing needs to be risk-based, but you need to take a risk approach to this. You need to, and you should probably do it in IT as well, but the consequences in OT are potentially significantly worse. I've got a bit in my Beamer bonnet about people say, oh, you can make things blow up. And to be honest with you, if you can go into an OT system and put things in and make things blow up, somebody's gone very wrong in the design of that, in the design process and the safety process, the safety issues around that system. But it does happen. But at the end of the day, if you need to know the consequences of what you can do with the systems, and you know, fundamentally, it comes back to this CVE issue. You can say, oh, this is a massive CVE that you've got on here. So what? In certain cases, it means you can do something to an information management system that makes some things a little, they don't necessarily have all the information they need to do some sort of analysis. Whereas they've got a really minor CVE on something which then allows you to influence the system and do major down, you know, consequence. If you shut certain systems down in an IT environment, you basically reboot them. Somebody's wrist gets badly slapped and they're back up and running in 10 minutes because they've just spun up the virtual machine again. If you do that in an OT environment and you do it at the wrong time, your physical system might be in a state where it might take you weeks to recover to put it back into a state where you can start the process again. Or it might, you know, it might cause that you need to replace certain components. For example, you've got chemicals in a container. They need a certain temperature to do certain things. You interfere with that, and it stops at the wrong temperature. You might then need to spend a week flushing through the system, or a couple of days flushing through the system to kind of get it back so you can start running it, doing operational things again. So. Kind of losing my train of thought, but I think at the end of the day it's about having the right part of the process is having the right people involved in the pen test and understanding what the consequences can be. And at the end of the day, that has to come from the client. You know, no matter how experienced you are in OT and how good a pen tester you are, you don't know everybody's hazards, you don't know everybody's consequences for their system. So that needs to come from the client, and that means they need to have the right people involved in the pen test.
And especially,
which isn't always the case,
Martin, even if like client is not confused about it, it's always like good practice to take one guy from HSC. I'll give one example. Like four years back, where I was struggling to map my findings with the availability, and it was an energy sector. So HSC guys gave us one reliability, availability, and maintainability RAM calculations, which tells you about the availability percentage on a very exact. So it was a lifesaver. Because even though you have CVSS, CPSS, it don't mean anything for the process.
So just going to pause here for a couple of questions that have come through, if we can. I'll bring them up onto the screen so we can see. But we've got one from Pavan. I know we touched on this just in that last exchange, but really in critical infrastructure, how pen testing can be recommended to customers just to make sure of any impact on operations. But I imagine that's how do we recommend to prevent impacts on operations?
I was going to say it's about taking that risk-based approach and de-risking as much as you can. Using, as we've talked about, offline kit, we've talked about test kit, we've talked about development, you know, whatever you want to call it. If you can do it on that, then do it on that. The only proviso I always say to clients, if they say we've got this test kit, we're going to do it, is that test kit representative of the live environment? How close is it to the live environment? Is it being, if they have got good change management in place, if they make a change to the live system, they should be shortly afterwards making a change to that environment. Isn't always the case. So there's no, you know, the closer it is to the live environment, the more benefit they get. So that's, you can reduce risk like that. You do it in outages. We've got a client every year they've got outages across that, and we go in as the back end of their outage, and we basically do the testing while it's an outage, which minimizes the consequences. So there are, that, you know, having said that, you can do it on live environments. It comes down to the risk appetite of the client in that respect as well. Some clients throw the hands up and go screaming from the room if you say you can do it in a live environment, and in some environments you don't want to do it in a live environment as well. But at the end, you know, if they can provide you with ways and means to de-risk it, you de-risk it.
Yeah.
And you recognize where there might be shortfalls in certain aspects of doing that de-risking.
I was going to say, just to add, completely agree with Martin, and factory acceptance testing is also a great time to do a pen test. Great time.
Yeah, and I'm just building on that factory acceptance testing. Yes, you can do almost anything with the system in a factory acceptance testing. You don't want to break the physical system. It's a text to it, but it de-risks a lot. It allows the client, you know, if you're bringing a new system into your environment, you need to know that it's secure. It's that secure by design paradigm that is thrown around willy-nilly for the last few years. But also the fact is that, you know, have often it's an integrator that's doing these systems for you. Has that integrator actually done it securely, followed any security requirements you've done, or have they kind of stuck their fingers in their ears and gone la 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 as they just give you a system that they think you want instead of what you actually want? So yeah, a fat testing is a really important thing.
5 years back when I was working with system integrator, we were obliged to do pen testing in our FAT and SAT stages both by the client. And that pen testing has to be done by independent assessor, not by us. So these are the things which is coming from asset owner, which is a best practices that we have seen so far. So
okay.
Absolutely. And that independence is important because again, I'm sure we've all come across people, you don't need to pen test it. We've done a pen test. we had John in the IT department come down and take a look at it, and he said it was secure. So it must be secure. So yeah.
Okay. Well, we're gonna I'm gonna bring up another, there's probably a few in succession here, so we'll rattle through them. Stefan has asked, one challenge he's found comes when you're setting up for a pen test with an audition focus. So is that you restrict the testers to work in a specific way instead of lettering them, finding the gaps in the security, that could be a major issue.
He's saying free for all, basically, if he has access. He can be creative and really find ways to, but of course, if you do that, you run the risk of knocking something over. So it's, once again, I mean, my perspective is you could really only do that in a test environment. Well, you could do it in a live environment, but it'd be a lot slower, a lot more. Yeah, there's a lot of risk there. But if you want to lower your risk as much as possible and have a go at it, then a test environment's for you.
Yeah.
But I think this also comes down to the scoping process. If a client has come to you and they've scoped it and they've said, this is what we want testing and this is what you want to test, that is what you test. I don't know in other parts of the world, but obviously one of the big concerns in the UK is you don't want to, be full foul of the Computer Misuse Act. And as part of that, you need authorization to do testing in certain. And if you've been told you can't test this, you don't test it. Because if you do, you can be you're potentially in breach of the Computer Misuse Act. So at the end of the day, if you've been told to do something, do it. It might not give the you say to the client, you might not get the full benefits, you might get us limited benefits, but at least as long as they recognize that, yeah.
Okay.
I think just going on to that point before we move on is going back to this whole idea that I was mentioning before of relationship management and working with the customer to achieve their goals. It's really important that you're focusing on helping them prevent the being disrupted rather than going in and demonstrating how many CVEs you can find in the allotted scope. So it is really important to do that. And also what I've found is that that good relationship management then tends to increase the risk appetite of who you're dealing with. So if you're giving them reason to trust you, they're probably going to be more likely to work with you, maybe be a bit more adventurous, to the point where I've had more than one interview participant state that they've actually had to rein in the risk appetite of their customers because the customers are like, now we can start attacking, like, for example, like PLCs. And they're like, no, we can't do that. We like really, really can't do that. And I thought that was weird the first time it came up and thought it might have been an anomaly. But it's happened over multiple interviews with different penetration testers now that it sometimes it is the risk appetite of the penetration tester that is the one that's holding the test back because things might go wrong.
Yeah, good point. So question from Steve, this is more about training, I think, certifications and moving from OT engineering to OT penetration testing. Any opinions on the preferred certification track?
Well, I did exactly that. In the UK, I went and got EC Council CEH because I didn't know any better. And then I got my OSCP and I found the OSCP to be far more valuable. You, as an engineer, you have an advantage in that regard. When I was taking the exam, you know, the stress and the pressure, it's like, well, I'm not going to kill anybody. You know, there's no chance of me knocking over a system and causing $2 million worth of damage. Yeah. So the exam was very stress-free for your typical engineer who's used to dealing with lots of other risks. But I'd recommend OSCP. There's nothing wrong with SANS certifications. They're top-notch, but they're just expensive. OSCP had definitely helped me on my pen testing stuff. Any sort of hacking cert, I believe there's others like, I'm sure ASIF or Rick or Martin might be able to comment on the other ones that could be a benefit.
Well, I was going to say, touching on the SANS one, I know SANS are developing an OT pen testing course. They have been developing it for quite a while, as far as I'm aware. And when it comes out, it's probably, if you can afford it, a good one to look at. But I know the price, they just seem to have skyrocketed the SANS courses in the last two or three years. They've gone through, but they're very good. Anyone that's done them, they always sing their praises, but. Yeah, you just need to have a very understanding boss.
I was going to say, if you want that SANS to develop that OT pen testing course faster, you just have to harass Don C. Weber to stop him getting to focus. Instead of doing seven things, he needs to just do the one.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got another question from Jamal. He's just following up from the comments earlier, but due to increased convergence, how do we see penetration testing methodologies evolving to address hybrid environments whilst maintaining OT safety and reliability?
I think we're kind of already there.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've kind of discussed already is the fact that a lot of the testing is IT TTPs, and we're already there looking at it. In fact, I think most of the testing is more focused on the IT or general purpose operating systems within an OT environment anyway. And I don't think there's any safety and reliability issues, because usually we're looking at things that ingest telemetry rather than, like, even if you're attacking an engineering workstation, typically they're not doing something live. Typically it's something that is usually switched off or is not doing something specifically at any given time without an engineer being specific. So I don't think any sort of convergence is going to affect penetration testing until we start seeing some sort of like virtualized PLCs, which I really hope doesn't become a thing in my lifetime.
You can get them. They are available. I don't know much about them, but you can get a virtualized PLCs now.
Docker is coming too.
Yeah. And that, I'm going to carry it this bit. It is scary, but then I don't know enough about it to kind of make a informed decision on that sort of thing. But
I mean, look at OpenPLC project. It's all virtualized. You have 3 VM you're playing around. So.
But yeah. And I think his next question, Jamal's next question about the digital twin thing, to pick up on that. I'm not sure. I've done some stuff with digital twins in the past. I think digital twins are great for kind of simulating processes, physical processes, all of that. Whether you could use them, I've got a question. I don't think they're very, unless anyone's got another opinion, I think their applicability to pen testing is quite limited because they're virtualized environments. It's not like you've got machines that have got operating systems on them that you can that have got packs to a certain level. It's I don't think they're really useful for a security pen testing kind of environment, unless anybody else has got another opinion on that, because
I was just going to say, like, there's digital twins and then there's digital twins and then there's digital twins. So the reality is that for most organizations, for you to get a full digital twin where it would actually be useful, because what you're trying to see is, if I tweak this valve, what is the impact over here?
Yeah.
You actually need to normalize your data, your process data. That is not an easy task. So the only ones that really do it at the moment is, like, if you bought a GE turbine, right? It's a packaged product. It's the same every, just you got a spare 200 million quid, just buy the turbine and then you get your digital twin. And that's because it's repeatable, right? It's the same equipment over and over and over again. So they have the ability to do that. Whereas your standard, like, brownfield site, you have to normalize that data, that process data. That's a lot of work, of work to get that done. And most organizations, when you say, hey, you need to normalize your process data, they just blink at you like you're insane. So, you know, I don't see digital twins being helpful for a very long time, especially in the pen testing space.
Yeah. The majority of the use case given that I have seen was making a HSC training based out of digital twins, or checking the configuration before doing on a live system. Like Simomatic platform, they have tie up with Siemens. So you can virtualize PLC there in Simomatic platform and do all those stuff. But for pen testing, and I don't think so. It's a good ground to perform a pen test.
So I'm going to bring up one more question from the chat, because I think we'll then run out of time for any more. I've got one from Jermaine. So how did the reporting on the outcomes of testing impact the shape of where companies want to take their security posture? So what are they looking for, essentially?
I like this question a lot, because you get a full range of companies. I'm sure any pen tester has probably done a pen test where they get the report, they put it in a drawer somewhere, they close the drawer, and they tick a little box, somebody that said to management that they've done a pen test. And that's frustrating, it's downheartening, but it's reality. But the whole point of a pen test, any pen test, should be to help client, you know, help you improve your security posture. Where are your gaps? Have what you've implemented been, you know, I often see it's a tool for you know, you've put in a load, you've just spent £500,000 on all this fancy boxes with blinky lights on them. Have they actually reduced your risk? You know, have they done anything to, is that money well spent? Would you have been better spending £2,000 on somebody to do a decent look at your firewall and get rid of those 300 rules that you've got coming through it that aren't, nobody knows why they're there, but nobody wants to touch them. So I think it is an opportunity for a good client. If you're getting a pen test of any sort, especially OT, it's an opportunity for you to look at where your gaps are and help you plan your security program going forward. You know, have you just spent £500,000 on a product, on a system which has reduced your risk by hardly anything, or has been badly implemented or badly configured, and therefore you can use the benefits can be really good from a budgetary point of view, from a posture point of view, from all sorts of points of view. And I think it's a pleasure to deal with a client that wants to do that, as opposed to just file it in a drawer and say thank you, we'll see you next year.
And plus, Martin, I have seen like there is a glitch in governance model also, because OT risk is not get represented well in the board executive level committee. Like, I haven't seen you have OT cybersecurity committee and you have stakeholder buy-in properly. It's a challenge. So you do have a risk champion, you do have everything, things getting done on a periodicity and frequency defined.
And I think the part of the issue around that is who's doing the cybersecurity for OT.
100%.
Often it's coming through the IT organization, because yes, they have the skills, they have the background, they understand the technologies. Unfortunately, it doesn't then come up. So it goes up through the IT infrastructure, through the CISO, through the CIO, through everything from that part's point of view. And to be fair to them, they don't necessarily understand the OT side of things.
And that is directly proportional to funding also. That's why OT is not getting funding.
It is, but if it comes, it should be coming up through the chief engineer or whatever the equivalent, through the operational engineering side of things, because they understand the consequences, they understand things, and they understand what that actually means. And I think that's where your representation sometimes at the board level can be lacking, because it's coming up through the wrong channels. Yes. If you're coming up through your chief engineer, it's probably they're going to understand the consequences and the issues around it significantly more than coming up through your CISO or your CIO, because to them, you know, they might not fully grasp depending on how good they are, but depending on where, you know, what that means from a risk point of view.
Okay, good stuff. Any more points on that question before I wrap up? I realize we're getting to the end, so as a professional outfit, I'll try and keep to the time.
I think we have two questions left. If patching is so difficult in OT, what are we doing with vulnerabilities discovered confirmed with OT pen testing?
You take a risk-based approach.
Yeah.
You don't patch all the things. You figure out the attack, you know, chain. Whether it's worth patching, you might have to take the operations down to do that. So
I think the intent of finding vulnerabilities, correct me if I'm wrong, and prioritizing them is to understand which OT process and zones need more control and network overarching controls and boundary protection. Because it's impossible to patch most vulnerabilities because of legacy issue, end of life, end of sale. So, and even if we could, as Gavin, you said, we would have to wait for significant downtime window. So that's a challenge. So I think the intention, crux of the matter is we are finding vulnerabilities just to prioritize them in an order that we can say, all right, I have four processes and this process need more overarching controls on top of it.
Okay, right. Thank you. Big thank you to the speakers, actually. That was a great session. Really enjoyed it. And hopefully the attendees did as well. Thanks to everyone that got involved with the questions and for joining the session. Feel free to reach out with myself or the panelists, make connections. You know, the group's here to build the network and collaborate as much as possible. So please do feel free to drop us a note. But Yeah, thanks for sharing, for joining. I'll share the recording and short clips later on LinkedIn and YouTube, etc. If you get the chance to like and share them, the engagement from you helps a lot. And obviously the plans are to grow the community moving into next year. So yeah, if you enjoyed it, please do like and share it. And yeah, thanks again for joining. Hope everyone has a lovely Christmas break, and we'll see you all in the new year. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. See you later.